right. Well, the commission has noticed this technical conference at the request of the parties that there was a settlement stipulation in 1303532, which was the EBA case before the commission about a year ago. And the parties requested a technical conference by March 15th to discuss issues dealing with evaluating dynamic allocations and dynamic scalers and their effect on energy balancing account costs to Utah customers. So the commission has scheduled this conference up. I'm Becky Wilson. I'm with the Utah Commission staff, and perhaps we can go around the room and introduce ourselves. It's my understanding there's going to be no one calling in on the phone, and then I think we'll just turn it over to the company. Here you have a presentation, and then go around the room if other people have input they'd like to provide on this technical conference.
Dan Gumbel with the Office of Consumer Services.
Neil Townsend representing UAE.
Matt Proft with the Division of Public Utilities.
Brian Dickman, Pacific Corp.
Mike Wilding, Pacific Corp.
Dave Taylor with Rocky Mountain Power.
Steve McDougall with the company.
Jerry Mayo, Commission staff.
Dan Martinez with the office.
Carol Revelt, Commission staff.
Jamie Dalton, Commission staff.
Chuck Peterson, Division.
Bob Davis with the Division.
Paul Clements, Rocky Mountain Power.
Artie Paul with the Division.
Gary Dodge, UAE.
All right. Well, that does it for the introduction. So, Steve, do we want to turn over the baton to you?
Well, I don't know. They handed me the the stacks, so. All we did is put together a couple slides just to give background on the EBA.
I'll be happy to.
Just to give us points to start talking from. But the main purpose of this meeting is really just because some parties had concerns in the last case. Like I said, I know Dan mentioned some in his testimony. And we just wanted to make sure that we discussed it and to come out with any questions or any answers that we need and just come up with any of the issues. So,
well, just to speak to the general concern that the office had in the testimony, it was the fact that the calculation of the EBA, just talking Utah, for the EBA deferral period was $24.3 million. Yet when you look at total net power costs between the base and the actual, it was only $18 million for that same period. And so you have $24 million here in Utah, total company number is 18, and from our standpoint, that appeared to be somewhat problematic, and for us, it raised the general concern of whether certain EBA design elements were having unintended consequences in inflating the 2012 Utah EBA accrual, and that led us to investigate a couple things. We started thinking about, well, is the use of a dynamic scaler and dynamic allocation skewing the results, and we went in and analyzed that, and the use of dynamic scalers does push up the EBA balance. The number is confidential. I can probably talk in general terms that it's let's just say the numbers are confidential. It does increase the EBA balance by a little more than we thought. It does have a material impact versus
using
static.
A dynamic allocation factor rather than static.
Right, and it's mainly the dynamic allocation factor.
But you were just speaking of as it related to calculating the scaler, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So those were the concerns that we raised in testimony, and I'll kick it back over to... I'm not sure any other party raised those concerns. There wasn't rebuttal testimony, as I recall. And so, the issue really wasn't vetted.
And this is only to do with a scaler.
Well, dynamic allocation and a dynamic scaler.
Well, see, because...
So.
See, I view that the two are... They're somewhat related.
Mm-hmm.
And that the dynamic allocation is just taking into account if Utah's percentage allocation is going up or down relative to other states.
Right.
And that's the same thing that's really happening in the scaler. It's to the same extent. So there shouldn't be a real difference between using dynamic allocations and dynamic allocations in the scaler. Did you notice a difference there?
Well, we were able to, I was working with Randy Falkenberg on this, and we were able to separate out the two effects. And I haven't reviewed my testimony in detail in a while, but we were able to come out with an effect for the scaler of, well, I can't talk about the number, but it was much smaller than the allocation. But because it was, you know, I mean, what happened in the, and I can speak to this number, what happened in the EBA test period, if you will, is that Utah loads went down. They went down by, I recall, 531 gigawatt hours, okay? And so that was one thing that was causing the EBA deferral to increase. I think it was worth $11 million.
Yes.
That piece. But then, interestingly enough, Utah loads hadn't decreased as much as other states. And so our load was still relatively higher than other states.
Right.
And so that increased our share of EBA costs relative to the other states.
Right. And I put on page 7 of this has that table where it shows the 531,000. Which is the load decrease in Utah relative to the base.
And but maybe you want to start from the beginning, and you know, those were just the issues that were raised in the office testimony.
Hey, and Dan, I mean, we're talking about EBA from a year ago, so if you're talking about total EBA numbers, I don't think there's any reason we can't use those numbers here. I don't think that stuff needs to stay confidential.
Okay, I can give you the impact as we calculated them, and like I said, it wasn't rebuttal testimony, and so, you know, the company might have come back with a different... No, you didn't look at this right, or whatever. But anyhow, the dynamic scaler was $1.42 million. Dynamic allocation, it increased the Utah SE factor by about 0.37%, and that resulted in an additional $5.49 million. So the total was almost $7
million. Yeah. And that would make, I have not ran the numbers, but that would make sense because I do know that both the allocation factors in Utah were higher. Like you said, what happened was Utah load came in lower than what was projected, but other states came in even relatively, you know, less than what Utah did there.
So it's the monthly SE factor goes up proportionally, is that what it is?
Well, this isn't the monthly SE, this is the annual
SE. It's the annual SE.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I need to review this a little bit.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I probably need a little tutorial here real quick. So what we do is we set the base rates in the rate case.
Yes.
And then going forward, we use the updated allocation factors to actually calculate what goes into the EBA account.
Yeah.
That may be a simple
But well, I think maybe
let's just go through this.
If we go through, I think we're going to answer some of the questions because I put some of the background.
But I thought I'd better just kind of go through what prompted
why we're here.
Right. Excuse me. Better turn that off.
Steve, you know, when you're going through, and maybe you're already going to cover this, but will you be going over exactly how you do a dynamic scaler? Because I understand how you would do dynamic factors in the allocation, the direct allocation methodology, but... you know, the way the scaler's calculated, maybe you could just explain that.
I did not put it in here, but we can discuss it. I have a copy of the filing here, and that has how we did it. But basically, the dynamic scaler is just using the dynamic allocation to come up with a revised scaler. We need to talk about that.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. I think I got that.
Huh?
I think I got that.
Well...
But you first allocate the costs using the dynamic allocations, and then you calculate the scaler.
Then you come up with a scaler. Okay. And so what the scaler really does is, the scaler is really the relationship of Utah's energy costs to total companies.
So it sort of reshapes Utah's into a system shape.
Right. And so all the dynamic does is to state that total company net power costs are $25 per megawatt hour, and Utah's energy costs are $25.50 per megawatt hour. Therefore, you have to scale that up by, yeah, whatever percent that is.
I'm doing your head.
I think it's 4%, but it could be. You're getting into dangerous territory here, Gary. We have calculators for that.
And also, I mean, at least as I see it, the whole point of the scalar, as opposed to just using the system average cost per megawatt hour, is there both demand and energy-related cost in that power cost. And that relationship is not the same every state. And so it just kind of reflects there's a little difference between the demand and energy components state by state. And so Utah's average cost per megawatt hour may be a little bit higher or lower in any given year than the system average. But it's just because of that mix of demand and energy-related cost in that.
Because 100% of your energy is not allocated on an SE factor. If it was, the scalars would be zero. You know, it'd be 100%. Utah would be identical. And so all we do is we calculated a scalar in the case and set a base, and then we look at actual costs. And it's the actual SE versus SG cost changes. It'll change that scalar slightly, but it's always been within a couple percent. You know, so Utah can vary slightly from the total company just based on, you know, some of the costs being allocated on an SG factor and other things.
I guess, and I also always would like to lead this discussion off with, again, at least as I've always understood it, that the whole concept of the EVA is to say, what's the change in the cost per megawatt hour applied to the number of megawatt hours we actually sold to customers in Utah? You know, and so I mean that's what you're always trying to achieve, and we've come up with, I guess, a half a dozen appears different ways to try to do that. But the ultimate objective is, what's the cost? What's the difference in the cost per megawatt hour for the megawatt hours we actually sold?
But if we go through this real quickly, on the one page of the presentation, page 2, we just gave the purpose, which just stated why it was scheduled for the agreement. For the overview, the only things I put in this presentation have to deal with net power costs. We also have wheeling in the EVA, but that wasn't the main issue here, so I just did not address them. We recognize that's in there. The basic concept is that we set the base net power costs in a Utah rate case. It comes up with, it's set basically by taking total company net power costs times the Utah allocation, which is using two different factors, SE and SG. We calculate actuals in the same manner, and then we calculate a difference. And as we see the difference, we're really seeing three things that are driving differences: the volume, the price, and Utah's allocation. And the EVA really measures the price-related variance, and that's what we're trying to get down to. And it accounts for the changes related to volume and allocation, and somewhat accounts for those in calculating and trying to get what the price difference is.
What do you mean by volume? This is the purchases and, or?
Well, let's say that Utah load goes up 5% higher than what was said in the rate case. By default, Utah's net power costs would go up 5%, let's assume, that everything's variable. That's a volume-related change, and if our usage went up and we had 5% higher sales, we're already collecting that money from customers.
Well. Yeah.
So we really shouldn't collect that from the EVA also.
Yeah, I think the whole point is...
And so that's where we're trying to isolate that difference. In this last case, it actually happened the opposite, where Utah sales came in lower, so we collected lower related to the volumes, and that's not what we're trying to measure. We're trying to measure what the price difference is, but you know, you've got to somehow account for that.
Again, because we're doing it at a dollar per megawatt hour basis as opposed to a total dollar basis, the change in volume of sales is taken into account when you do the calculation.
Change from the base is what you're saying.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
I mean, we oftentimes say that, you know, net power cost is $1.5 billion, but reality net power cost is $25 a megawatt hour or 2.5 cents a kilowatt hour. That's what's in rates.
Based on the assumed volumes.
Right. It was a $1.5 billion based upon one assumed level of quantity of sales.
And that's put into rates, you know, more or less, except for the scalar, which adds another dimension. Mm-hmm.
And so the next page basically has the simple EVA calculation. This is simple. Well, it's the formula that's in the tariff and in the commission's order. And basically, the EVA deferral by month is calculated on a dollar per megawatt hour basis if you simplify it down. And all we do is take the two differences in the dollar per megawatt hour times by 70%. So because we're doing it on a dollar per megawatt hour, we're somewhat eliminating that load variation. Because we're looking at the change in the dollar per megawatt hour, not the change in total net power costs. Because if you were to look at the change in total net power costs and ignore load, you would overcollect.
But Steve, isn't it true that, I mean, that's just one expression of the equation?
Yes.
I mean, you could multiply it out and you could come up with total dollars. So, I mean, the ultimate goal is to look at revenue minus cost.
Yes. And we have different states that do it differently. But they all get, if I were to compare the Utah and Wyoming, they do the exact same thing. They try to do the exact same thing, but they get there from different sides and different methods. In Wyoming, what they do is they actually put power costs in a separate tariff. So you have your actual collections of dollars and you know what they are per year. And then what they do is they just have us take and say, here's the total net power cost, here's Wyoming's allocation factors during the period, what's the difference?
Yeah, it's a little bit more similar to our Questar approach too. I mean, we've got it completely removed.
Right. And so in Utah, where it's not removed, that's why we do the dollar per megawatt hour. And over a year, the numbers are going to come out almost the same. There's going to be some slight variations. And one of the things that's going to cause slight variations is the use of the monthly dollars. Because whenever you get to monthly and you have different dollar per megawatt hour and different usage by month and different variations by month, you will get some slight differences, but it's going to come up with the exact same theory.
And I think what I was just thinking, maybe this is what you're saying, is to me it shouldn't make any difference whether you do it on a dollar per megawatt hour or you do it total net power cost and then allocate it. I mean, there's still the allocation in there. I mean,
yes.
Maybe over a period of time it should be the same. Maybe over a short period it's not, but it seems to me that...
It would be...
In other words, it's like Becky said, you should be able to take this formula and build up to the total.
Yes.
And get exactly the same results.
Yes, and you do have to factor in load if you're looking at total dollars, but you get to the same place.
Right. And then my understanding of the difference between like the scalar method and the just directly allocating it is the shape over the months. I mean, because the scalar tries to recreate, you know, kind of equate Utah's load. It scales it up to what the system shape is.
Yes.
So you'll get a difference in the months, and those differences can be, you know, a million or so different on any given month.
Right. And your main difference is going to be in years when you change rates in the middle of the year. Because you could have slightly different shapes, you know, between the two different test periods, especially if they're separated by years. Hmm. You know, it's not going to be big, like you said, but it will occur. And so that's really what's going to cause your variations. The next page, I just tried to identify the four methods. I didn't try to describe them. I just mentioned that we are currently filing using four methods. We use the scalar method as the method that's actually in the filing for the dollars. And then we have three additional methods. the 090-3515 method. That's the commission-ordered method.
That's just an allocation.
That's just an allocation.
It's the same as the wheeling revenue.
Yeah, it's the same as the wheeling revenues. We have what I'm calling 11035200 Exhibit A2. It's basically the same, except rather than looking at monthly variations in energy and generation, it looks at annual differences in energy and generation.
It comes out very close to the commission's approved method, right?
And Brian always points out that he calls that my mistake.
The McDougal method.
And the whole reason was we got to the final part of the settlement, and all of a sudden I said, wait, the commission ordered a different method. And just off of memory, I was trying to do it, and I did what that exhibit was, and then you pointed out it really wasn't the same. So that's the reason that one was created, was it was at the very end of settlement. We had to put an exhibit in to address it, and I put it in slightly differently. Like you said, it's very close. That's why he always calls it my method. And then the 11035200, Exhibit A3 has a different method. It is the one that was promoted by, we don't identify what parties identified it, but it was put into the settlement at the request of parties. And basically, it uses monthly SE and SG factors. And so we recreate SE and SG factors by month.
And that whole concern was just that power costs are different. Power costs and loads are different month by month, and there was some feeling that...
But remind me now, maybe you have this later in the slide, but just my recollection of this is if I take the 12 monthly SE factors, they don't sum up to the annual factor.
No.
And especially when you get variances, they don't. And so one of the things we've been asked as part of MSP to show what monthly SE factors do to the system. This is actually looking at monthly SE and SG factors.
Right.
What this ends up doing, using monthly SE and SG factors, if you look at the exhibit, it allocates about an extra $1.5 million to Utah. I think it was in the base, or $2 million.
And it's kind of showing up in your...
And it's showing up. And then what we do is we take a bottom line subtraction to get it down so it still equals the same total as what was in the case. So it's an allocation method that, if states were to use, would not be beneficial to Utah, but that parties wanted to see just to give differences by month and different SE and SG factors by month.
And I think, yeah, like you said, you guys have been filing the results for the EBA, and it is coming out about like that.
Yeah.
A little bit higher.
Can it go the opposite way? Could it go either way?
Yeah, it could go either way.
It theoretically could, but in reality, it won't. In reality, for the base costs, I won't say it won't, but it hasn't in a long time, probably since the early 90s. And the reason is the net power costs tend to be higher in summertime, and Utah's allocation is higher in summertime.
So you have a higher share of the period when the costs are also higher.
That's how come you're getting several states pushing for it who somewhat know that that's the...
It's only about $1 million higher so far that we've been looking at.
Yeah. Okay. So... Yeah.
So it's like, so higher purchase costs, those types of things drive it up then, basically, in net power cost?
Yeah. You also run in your gas and other more expensive fuels more, I think.
You do go
like
further
the
up the stack. Yeah, so you can make it further up the resource stack, but and also
purchases
when we are buying.
Doing more
so
purchases.
Higher run rate, the marginal units of fuel.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
definitely.
And those are the months when Utah has higher allocations. So it's not a surprise, but... You know,
the small amount is kind of a surprise.
Is it a million a month or a million?
Annual.
Well, and that, yeah, and at least in the ones you've recently.
Yeah, the ones we've seen so far, yes. We don't have many data points.
Yes, we have
a small sample.
We have one year.
A sample of one.
And what I'm probably, just as a side note, going to propose an MSP is just, we're going to do that, we'll have a monthly SG and SE, but they only wanted the monthly SE. The monthly SG actually hurts Utah a little more. I will do that monthly SE, but I'm going to use our EBA filing and produce that for MSP to show them what the impact of monthly versus annual SE factors are on that power cost.
So the monthly SE, you say, would be even more modest?
Yes.
Okay.
So they won't. They want to see.
Just a little preview.
Yeah. That's what I will be proposing in the next MSP meeting, is just to use that, because it's something we're already doing, and it will give it a real-life example of what monthly versus annual SE factors would do on net power cost, which is what Hellman requested in the last meeting. So.
I mean, you said something about doing an adjustment at the end. Is that in the rate case, or is that in some filing?
That's in the exhibit. So if you look at Exhibit A3, from both the filing and from the power cost.
And the reason you do that is to make the monthly, the sum of the monthly
equal
the annual.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Right.
And that was the problem, I mean, just going back to the testimony, that was the problem that I saw from the testimony about this, was that the SE and the underlying SC, or the SG itself, do not add up to the annual factor. And I didn't ever figure out a way of calculating those.
Right, and that's how come with
so that they did sum up to the annual.
Use a scatter.
Right. And I've never figured out a way to do that, and that's how come when you look at that methodology, at the very bottom there's always a line that makes an adjustment to come up with what you would have calculated in a total.
And that's the $1 million that was thrown around.
Yes. Okay. And I can't remember what we called the one.
Is that back on the sheets where you actually allocated out?
Yes.
And added at the bottom.
So
the
there's
main
a disconnect between the monthly and the annual.
Yeah, that's right. It's on the detail sheet.
Well, it's just the algebra of getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's my preview of my MSP argument.
It is. Well, it is a difference. Yeah. And that's where, you know, you have to come up with what you believe is the
Yeah, that doesn't mean the one's right and one's wrong. They're just different. Right?
They're just different. But, you know, in the EBA, we didn't want to have, you can't have a different starting point and a different final point, so that adjustment was put in. And then, you know, like I said, those differences. The last three pages in this exhibit are all pages that we can just use to talk through some of the issues. Page 6 is just how we are calculating it in as simple a form as possible. This happens to be Table 1 from Brian's testimony. So all we're doing is looking at the difference in dollar per megawatt hour times by Utah load, and that's how we come up with the deferrable cost.
And this is a scalar representation right here?
It is.
So when you say Utah load, that would be the actual?
That's kilowatt hours sold.
Yes.
Megawatt hours sold.
Yeah. And this is for 2012, the
calendar
year?
This is for 2012, yes. Okay. So all you're doing is saying that the difference in the dollar per megawatt hour is basically a dollar per megawatt hour times by the 25 million megawatt hours.
And for the allocation method, you got something like 13.7 million for the commission's method.
So that's the total deferrable is the 99 cents times the 20.
Well, and the 99 cents includes the
wheeling,
because this is the total.
Right. So
Let's see, compared to the 17,000.
From your exhibit SRM3, that for the commission's allocation method, you would add 13.7.
I think it's 15.7.
What'd you add?
Well, I'm just talking about in terms of this thing here, the 24,300,000. That's just the 99 cents times the 25 million load.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you take 70% of that 24 million, that's the 17. Then you calculate some interest, and that gets you the total deferral.
That's right.
Okay.
Can you give me the exhibit number?
Yeah.
I didn't find that.
And so
I had SRM-3.
So BSD 1 comes up with it's the 17.394 for the A1 method, and then SRM3 is, including interest, 16.155.
So the difference is the 17.4 versus the 16.2.
Correct. Now that's the original filing, Becky. Maybe you were looking at the.
I was looking at your revised, your final exhibit for the settlement. I was looking at the. I think it was.
So that would
October
be,
22nd
yeah,
filing.
Yeah, so that would be, so then this A1 would go down to 15 million, and then compared to a 13 million or so.
Yeah, okay. Great. Yeah. That's got it.
And then if we go to page 7, I think that's where we can talk a little bit about some of the issues Dan brought up.
This gets to Artie's comment too.
Yeah.
You can go about it two different ways and get the same answer.
Right. Because what we've really got in here is we've got around a 14 million net power cost variance, 15 million. Then we have that load related variance of around $12 million. What's really happening here is that we set the base at 631. 632 in the case, but because the Utah load dropped, we really only collected around 620 million. And that's where, if you were to look at this, say, on a Wyoming type basis, where you say, what were the actual costs and what did you really collect? Because of the load drop, we really only collected around 620 because of that load decrease. So what we're measuring is, okay, we collected 620 based upon the base and the load change, which is automatically captured in the dollar per megawatt hour. Our actual costs were at 646. And that's one of the major reasons that, that load change, you can view it two different ways. The dollar per megawatt hour means that we don't have to, it's inherently in there, but it's doing the same thing. And that can very easily flip. Okay, and preliminary numbers are it did flip this year, by the way, in the 13. Where that load change actually goes the other direction, because Utah loads were higher than what was in the case in 13. So consequently, the load helps to offset the increase. But it's really still looking and saying, here's the dollars per megawatt hour that you collected, and because load went up, you collected more. So all that's trying to do is to adjust that, to say all we want to do is just collect, what we should, and we ought to ignore what we've all, the amount we've collected because of base rates.
So this is just looking at Utah load in isolation, not relative to the other states yet.
Right.
Okay.
It's looking and saying, because of the Utah load change, did we collect more or less than the Utah base?
Right. Was the revenue case. Was revenue higher or lower than you projected in the case?
Yes. And that's the whole thing that this is trying to do.
I mean, another way you could show this table would be here, where you got this Utah allocated base NPC. You could restate that base NPC at the number of megawatt hours sold to Utah, as opposed to the number of megawatt hours used in the rate case test period.
And we have, in the past, we had one mechanism that actually did that. They said, what was the base and the net power cost multiplied by the load, divided by the load in the case,
Well, that's what I think the commission's method was trying to do.
And that's what it really is doing. It's,
the scalar adds a little twist because...
It adds a little bit, and that was... And I think even the scalar was just because we were trying to get back to what the theory was and make it work. And so that's how come the load change is in there. The second thing that can shift that Dan has pointed out is the allocation factors. And I didn't look at the allocation factors themselves, but what I did look at is on the last page, or at least what I provided, was what the base and the actual power costs are. And you can see where in the base, Utah was just under 43%, and actual we were just over 43% in Utah. And that's the allocation factor shift. What's happening is on an actual basis, it's all based on usage. One of the things that was discussed in the original technical conferences on the EBA was the load shifting between states, and it was brought up by somebody, I think it was Kevin, but I wouldn't swear to that. What happens if Utah has a cold winter? I mean, if Oregon has a cold winter, would that impact Utah's EBA? And the answer was yes, if you do not adjust for allocation factors. Because all of a sudden you could have the Oregon allocation increase, and if you don't take that dynamic allocation factor into account, you're not going to see those swings. Now, as actual allocation factors come in, we're going to see swings, but really what that is accounting for Utah's usage in relationship to the total net power cost. So it's really trying to adjust, saying, what are Utah's real net power costs? And that's the thing that's accounted for, you know, in the commission-approved method. They said to use the Utah's allocation per month. That's what's being accounted for there, is that Utah's percentage will change every month. And it will be driven by weather. It will be driven by the economy, by a whole bunch of other factors. But that is the other thing that's being accounted for, just to say the basic theory of the EBA is... What costs are we collecting for net power costs? And what costs were incurred to serve Utah customers in the net power costs? And so that's why I think the, you know, and that's why the dynamic allocation factor shift, I think, is appropriate.
I mean, Wyoming still stays with static, right?
No.
In terms of, they use dynamic as well?
Yes.
Why do I think Wyoming used static?
They use dynamic, like I said, what they actually do, and it would produce, if it's on an annual basis, I ran some original numbers back when we were getting both the orders. And if you theoretically look at it over a year, I get almost the same results. And that is what Wyoming does, is they say, here's what we've collected in a separate rate. And here's what your actual net power costs are, taking total company actual net power costs times by the actual allocation factors. And the actual allocation factors, I give them to Brian once, and I give him the exact same numbers for both Utah and Wyoming, so I know they use the exact same numbers.
In Wyoming, they do it monthly or annual?
They do it annually.
Idaho does dynamic or static?
They look purely at total company dollar per megawatt hour.
They do one step back. There's no scalar. They just cost per megawatt hour is X in the base, and cost per megawatt hour is Y, and they just take that difference times megawatt hour sold.
So theirs is...
More of a system.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just
they're assuming that Idaho costs are going to vary at the same rate as the system.
We don't have one in Washington or Oregon at the present time.
We do have one in Oregon, but it has very large
dead man.
Right. It's envisioned to be just the straight dollar per megawatt hour as well.
Which makes this way simpler.
Yeah, I know that would clarify, maybe just tweak the response to Wyoming. We use annual factors, but they are applied to monthly costs. And compared to monthly collection.
So every month, you're using the same factors.
The buildup, but at the end of the year, it's annual. It's done monthly for the interest and the other factors.
It's basically the commission.
It's kind of like the commission's.
Doing it that way, they should add up. It shouldn't matter.
No.
I don't think. You do it at one time, once a year, you do it monthly. If you're using the same allocation.
Yeah, if you use the same percentage every month, then it doesn't make any difference.
So they're using an annual allocation factor and just applying it to the monthly.
Right, values.
Okay.
Which is, the commission's method, more or less.
The only thing that could differ in Wyoming, and I don't know this, is I cannot remember if they're net power cost collections are based 100% on energy or if they apply part of it to a demand charge. That,
I could split.
I think that, just in my own mind, I was thinking that part of it was based on demand. So there would be some minor variations, if demand and energy don't go up by the same percent.
Okay. So really what went on with loads relative to the EBA period of 2012, EBA deferral period of 2012, was driving roughly two-thirds of the, the calculated EBA balance of 24 million.
No, I don't think that's really true, Dan. I think
it just appears
that way because you're trying to reconcile between total dollar numbers that are two sets of load. What drove the Utah EBA was the change in cost per megawatt hour times the megawatt hour sold to Utah.
Well, I'm trying to tear this apart so I understand how it's constructed. And if I go to Table 3, it appears that what happened with respect to actual versus base sales in that period drove a lot of cost towards Utah. So that's, if you will, the absolute load change for that period. And then there's a relative load change in the other states that our loads didn't go down as much as the other states, and so, we got a higher SE factor as a result of that. And so there's two, as I'm understanding it, there's an absolute and a relative load impact going on in this particular EBA calculation that's making up, roughly two-thirds of that calculated balance. Now, I'm trying to understand how this is all fitting together.
Yeah, I don't know where the two-thirds comes from.
Well, as I understand it, in terms of just the drop in Utah load, before you compare it to other states, you're getting $11 million out of the 24. And then what you've got going on is Utah loads didn't drop as much as other states, and that's increasing your, because the dynamic allocation is increasing your SE factor.
In comparison.
I understand where you're coming,
And tell me if I'm in error in terms of thinking that way.
No, I think you're thinking there are two things. What was fouling me up was the two-thirds, because in my mind what I was doing is adding the 11 and the 14.
Right.
And saying that of the net power cost differential of about $26 million, the load change was 11, so I was thinking it was, in my mind, I was saying 40% of the change.
Right.
And what you were doing is adding in the wheeling and stuff, so and looking at the baseline. But regardless of the percent, yes, there are two things going on here. One is, I think what you're calling the absolute is the change in Utah collections, because we collect either more or less than what was projected in the base.
Right.
And that is going to go on every year. And that's the one that I think is flipping on us in 2013. It's preliminary
the
numbers.
Side.
Yeah. Because we're going to be and that's that absolute, that 11.7 million, that's actually going to be the one that's going to flip somewhat on us, very likely. I've seen the loads, and I think it's going that way in the EBA that will be filed in few weeks.
And isn't part of that is just, the EBA is based on actual sales, not normalized. I mean, if you want to go with a fixed factor, it seems like somehow you'd have to construct a mechanism that would just say, here's the rate case forecast, what's normalized actuals.
Right. Because
that only works if your periods align, that the period that use a test period to look forward and the period at which you're calculating the EBA are the same, because you could have the same EBA rates go on for several years. And even if you normalize, you're going to have load growth over that time period. And so even a normalized, you're going to get a difference between the loads in the base and the loads in the actual. And Dan, here's where I sometimes have a little different perspective than you do on this, is you keep saying, well, two-thirds of the change is directly related to loads. But you have to realize that this actual NPC, the 646 at the top, 646 million at the top of Table 3, if the loads had not changed, if the level of megawatt hour sales had stayed the same as in the test period, that would be a much bigger number there. You know, you're...
Right. Because had we sold 531,000 more megawatt hours, we would have
this 646 higher. Would be a much bigger number.
I see.
So would an easier way to do this?
I see your point.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this. Would an easier way, so when you have that Utah allocated base net power cost that says 631, if you said Utah allocated collections and made that 620,
that's one way it could.
Difference.
Yeah, and this here is not really part of the calculation. It was just us trying to show the components. But yes, that there's two
that's
ways
the way
you
to do it, Doug.
Yeah,
we could call it collected base NPC.
Well, yeah. I would even just say base and NPC at actual sales.
Right, and that in hindsight might have been a better way for us to have explained it, because in our minds that's what we were doing, but it's not clear. It was clear to Brian and I because we were dealing with it every day, but I can see where that would have been a better way to have presented it.
All I can tell you,
I think no matter what you do, you're getting
it. All I can tell you
is a difference it is going to cost. Yes.
Is Brian and I worked on the language in that section of his testimony over and over and over again to say, we have to write this so it doesn't look like it's a loss revenue adjustment, because it's not. You know?
It's trying to explain it in writing was...
How do you kind of, maybe this is a dumb question. So I'm trying to figure out, when you figure out what you actually collected, obviously you have your volumes. But then
we aren't really... In the formula itself, you're not looking at what you're actually collecting. You're looking at the dollar per megawatt hours. So if your megawatt hour changes, your dollars, you know, it's automatically reflected, because all we're doing is saying that we're collecting $24 per megawatt hour.
Yeah.
And we should be collecting $24.30. So whether the megawatt hours are, you know, $25 million or $26 million, that change is accounted for because we're using a dollar per megawatt hour. Here we're saying, okay, it's really accounted for in the dollar per megawatt hour, but in looking at the dollar per megawatt hour, it's not intuitive that here's what's going on. And so what we were trying to do is break that out into components just to explain it, saying, okay, inherent in the dollar per megawatt hour, these components are really what's in there.
I have to say, it's always easier to me to just say it's $1 per megawatt hour times the load, you get the revenue.
Right.
So you're trying to find out what did you actually, you know, what revenue did you get, what your actual cost, compared to the projections, you know, that you were going to have in the case, you know.
Yeah.
And the difference is what should flow through.
And that's how come the first table we did, and to try to summarize it, was looking at the dollar per megawatt hour to try and simplify it to that method. And then here we are just trying to show the components.
If you did what Matt suggested, would you get rid of that third step there, actual load and sales?
Yes.
Yeah, you would account for the difference in the first step already.
Yeah. Right, yeah, so this, okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, like I said, this was a summary that was trying to explain the differences. If you put that 11 at the minus the 631, it might make it more clear.
Yeah, it'd be 620 or something.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And then so that's 11 million.
Right. Yeah. Right. You would account for that in one step rather than two steps.
If you have the 620 there, I mean, yeah, you do have your actual sales volume-wise, but then what do you use for the price on it?
this is.
I'm just trying to think, is that something you extract from your system?
We just using the price that was set in the last case, because in the last case we set a base dollar per megawatt hour.
Basically, you use the 2340 times the number of megawatt hours you sold. That would be your base NPC number.
That goes back to what Becky was just saying.
Right.
That's the 40.
Right.
And it's the thing is that, you know, we're looking at it, and the dollar per megawatt hour, for people who look at dollar per megawatt hour and understand, you know, people look at things differently. That makes sense that, okay, it accounts for everything, but if you start looking at the total dollars, it doesn't. Sometimes it's like, okay, I'm trying to use my mind to come into a logical thing. Does this make sense? And it doesn't unless you think about all the different components in there.
I think maybe there's sometimes, maybe this is just me, but there's confusion on, okay, so base net power cost is not an assumed collected. It's just a number. But really, we're taking the difference between not the base, but between what you actually collected and what was your actual
cost. Well, again, you have to get look at base NPC, not as a total dollar amount, but at a dollar amount per megawatt hour. Then once you do that, then...
And that's where the numbers are really different between the scalar method and the commission's allocation method, because that dollar per megawatt hour is different per month for each method.
Right. And
so when the new numbers come in, they're the same. The new actuals are exactly the same in both methods, but
and it can go either way because it depends on which months are high and low, because you have different base dollar per megawatt hour, so you end up with the same.
Right.
Theoretically, you know, it's somewhat similar. It's just which months are the variances in, and which months are, what are those dollar per megawatt hour variances.
Right.
Similar, but it's not the same.
Yes.
Yeah, it's similar, but you won't get, if you're trying to actually see what Utah actually collected, the scalar's not going to get you that. The commission's method will.
And I guess I would argue further that neither will get you what's collected, because there's a rate that's set in the tariff, you know, cost of service rates is one rate per year, and we're looking at monthly dollars per megawatt hour.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe something to look at beyond the pilot program is going to more of an unbundled rate that gets, you know, set your power cost rate.
Yeah.
And then you can just extract.
Right.
Here's the revenue we collect.
Let me state that just a little bit differently, because I think you said it exactly right. In Utah, we have, I love what you use residential example. You have a rate in the winter, and you have a rate in the summer. So you have two different rates, but those rates don't change by month, they're just changed by season. But when we deem these EBA costs, we have a different EBA cost each month. And so we say, in those collections, the EBA piece is a different amount each month, even though the rate itself doesn't change.
Right, we're kind of assuming that the bundled rate is collecting that cost per unit every month in each one of those months, and it changes.
So, but that's that's a concept I hadn't thought about till just then. Is that we are saying that EBA costs that we're collecting are different every month, even though the rate only changes once a year or twice a year.
So annually, you're probably getting close, but monthly it's.
In order to really match, you know, if you were to do annual, it would be closer to what the rates are really set at. But
I'm not quite sure you can argue different rates every month on
the residential.
Just complicated even further.
Just an unbundle.
Yeah, I already have the bill that people hate me, you know, every time I propose something that he says is conceptually correct but practically quite complicated.
No, and I'm not suggesting that seasonal rates are not proper, but, you know, if it's unbundled, it's a heck of a lot easier just to say, here's what we collected.
Are you trying to propose a fifth method?
No. No more methods.
Okay, I was just trying to clarify that. He told me before we walked in, Steve, you better not propose a fifth method.
No more mistakes.
I think that this, even though you have an unbundled, whatever you put in the, you know, you establish for the year, the rate case, that kind of is your unbundled amount, right?
That's what we're using, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is our unbundled amount, but we're varying it by month in the EBA.
Right.
Well, are there other thoughts? Dan, is that starting to
I think it was useful walking through this again.
Right before they file again, so you can remember it next week or whenever, 2 weeks.
When you're going to update the fourth quarter is going to come in when? Another week or so?
Well, we file it concurrent with the EBA filing, so it'll come in on the 15th of March. Normally, it would come in the end of this month, but since it's only a 2 week difference there, then we say we'll just.
The filing is the fourth quarter.
Right, so we just, the filing is the fourth quarter report.
Any other questions from anyone? All right, well, thanks so much, Steve, for kind of putting that together and Dan for raising the issues.
I always think it's good to make sure that we all understand these are not easy.
It's pretty complicated. It took me a full day to go through all of this stuff, you guys. You
need
to remember.
It's a pilot program.
Yeah, well, one of my goals has generally been, when we disagree with each other, it should be because we really disagree, not just because we don't understand.
I mean, just going through the formulas for each one of these things, it's just, it's a task.
I think the trick is the guts of the scalar.
The commission's
like method? You've got different demand energy components in each state. It's just a number of scalars.
Yeah, the scalar is just looking at Utah's, like I said, Utah's dollar per megawatt hour compared to the system, and it is after the fact. Just looking at saying what are, you know, if we were to look and say, here's the net power cost allocated to Utah, what's its dollars per megawatt hour, what's the total system, and what's that percentage difference? And that's where it was.
It's the guts of how you got to that.
Yeah.
I mean, you do have to remember that the company's initial filing was simply a dollar per megawatt hour mechanism.
Yeah, it was. And then the commission just modified that a tiny bit by trying to bring in Utah allocated costs rather than using the system.
But, you know, I would think it's, you know, at some point in time, we want to go back and revisit this and say, okay, we've done a whole bunch of complicated ways. How much different is that than just simply using the dollar per megawatt hour, which is pretty straightforward?
Or just using the allocated cost of it, which you already have.
Okay. Turn off.
Yep.
I think we're all there to charge.